Winds becoming south after midnight. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, look for a high of 87. The wind will be light and from the west. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 67. The wind light and out of the southeast. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high in the low 90s. Expect afternoon heat index readings to range from 100 to 105 degrees. The wind will be from the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday night through Thursday night, partly cloudy with lows in the mid-70s, highs in the low 90s, with afternoon heat index readings ranging from 100 to 105. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the 80s. Most locations reporting some sunshine. Some locations had partly sunny skies, some mostly sunny, some sunny. In Rockford, it was 84 degrees at the top of the hour, 80 at O'Hare, 83 at Bloomington and Mattoon, 85 at Carbondale. In South Bend, Lafayette and Indianapolis, 84 degrees. Terre Haute reported 83 degrees. And at Willard Airport, it was 82 degrees at the top of the hour. The dew point, 73, giving us a heat index of 87. The relative humidity, 74%. The wind out of the north at 6. The barometric pressure, 29.99 and falling. And Willard Airport reported a partly sunny sky at the top of the hour. At 12:39 Central Time, 85 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. I'm Celeste Quinn. This is the Afternoon Magazine. The Federal Aviation Administration's authorization ran out Friday night when Congress failed to renew it. Air traffic controllers and other essential employees are still on the job, but 4,000 others have been laid off, and construction projects have come to a halt. It's because the House and Senate cannot agree on subsidies for commercial flights to rural areas. Morning Edition host Mary Louise Kelly talked about the situation with NPR reporter Brian Naylor. She asked him if flights at the nation's airports have been affected.
Well, by all accounts, things are fairly normal. Flights are departing and landing on schedule because, as you say, the air traffic controllers are on the job.
So not too much of an impact so far then if you're trying to catch a flight today?
No, the air traffic controllers are considered essential employees, so they were told to report to work. However, there are some 4,000 other agency employees who won't be coming in today, about 1,000 of those in the Washington, D.C. area. And also construction projects at airports around the country will be halted. That includes work being done at major airports such as Chicago's O'Hare. In fact, there's projects in all 50 states that are going to be put on hold. And these construction workers will be idled in an industry where the unemployment is already pretty high. Because the money for these projects comes from the Aviation Trust Fund, and that is inoperable because of the shutdown.
Brian, I understand one side effect of this is that it might be a really good day to buy a plane ticket because you won't have to pay tax on it.
Well, in some cases, that's the case. Because of the shutdown, the airlines are not collecting the tax for the airline tickets. However, most of the major carriers now say that they're actually going to take that money for themselves. And so they're actually raising their fares a bit. So if you're flying any of the major carriers, American, United, Southwest, they've all raised their fares. So you won't notice any difference. Some of the smaller carriers will pass that savings along to consumers, but most consumers won't notice any difference.
Okay. So the big question, why did Congress let the FAA authorization expire in the first place?
They've been talking about revamping the FAA's authorization for several years. They've got some big issues to deal with. They're trying to upgrade the system, that the technology that the air traffic controllers use to track flights. And while they've been wrestling this major bill, they've passed some 20 temporary extensions of the reauthorization. This time, though, a relatively minor issue got in the way, one that would limit federal subsidies at a handful of rural airports, saving about $16 million. House Republicans Republicans want to end this subsidy. And so they inserted a provision in this temporary reauthorization that would affect some of the smallest of the small airports. However, those airports happen to be in some of the Senate leaders' states. And so it's almost kind of like a little schoolyard squabble holding this bill up.
Brian, just quickly, you mentioned temporary authorizations, but they've ultimately failed to reach a deal. This sounds an awful lot like what we're seeing happening on a much larger scale with the talks over the debt ceiling.
You're right, Mary Louise. You know, this is just small potatoes compared to the trillions of dollars they're talking about with the debt ceiling. But it's telling that, you know, something even as small as this can't be resolved. It's just indicative of how dysfunctional this Congress has become.
NPR reporter Brian Naylor, he spoke with Morning Edition host Mary Louise Kelly. It's 1243. WILL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois, and this is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL on AM 580, 90.9 FM, HD3, and online at will.illinois.edu. Well, it's one of the most significant pieces of prehistoric art ever found in North America, a carving of a mammoth on a piece of fossilized bone dating back to the Ice Age. An amateur fossil hunter found it several years ago in Vero Beach, Florida. Now, after 3 years of study, a team of researchers say they think it's authentic. NPR's Greg Allen went to Florida to talk to the fossil hunter.
James Kennedy is quick to tell you he doesn't know all that much about archaeology or prehistoric art.
I mean, I'm not a scientist. I just go out and I dig up bones good. I'm good at finding them. That's one thing I do, buddy.
Kennedy is 41 with sandy blonde hair and a goatee. Around his neck, he wears a large prehistoric shark tooth. He grew up in Vero Beach, a quiet town on Florida's Atlantic coast known mostly for its orange and grapefruit groves. But it's also a good place to find fossils. At Kennedy's house in Vero Beach, boxes of fossils are everywhere.
There's a mammoth vertebrae. Here's a piece of mammoth rib. This is a piece of a tusk right here. I've got bigger chunks of that, but that's mammoth ivory.
Mammoths and mastodons were abundant in Florida until about 13,000 years ago, when they became extinct. While there are lots of fossilized bones, the one thing never found in the Western Hemisphere were any images of these Ice Age elephant ancestors, such as those found in European cave paintings. Until now. In an article published in the Journal of Archaeological Science, researchers from the Smithsonian and the University of Florida say that the depiction of a mammoth engraved on a fossilized bone appears to be an authentic piece of art dating back at least 13,000 years.
I've seen the markings on it right here.
Sitting at Kennedy's kitchen table, we're looking at a picture of the engraved bone. He has the original stored in a vault. For more than 2 years, it sat in a box under his kitchen sink. He says he picked it up about 5 years ago at a site in Vero Beach. He immediately recognized it as a piece of fossilized bone, probably from a mammoth or mastodon, about 15 inches long and 4 inches high. He says he didn't see the engraving on it, though, until a couple of years later, when he was cleaning some of his fossils. On this one, as the dirt came off, a picture emerged.
First, I thought it just, you know, could be scrapes and marks on it, but no, there's no mistaking it. You have a walking mammoth right there. I mean, here's his tail, his tusk, his trunk, everything's there. I thought it was really neat, but I thought that there was lots of other stuff like this. I had no idea that there was nothing else like that.
In fact, it's one of a kind. Although there are stone points and other archaeological evidence suggesting humans lived in North America during the Ice Age, this may be the only piece of art in the Western Hemisphere dating back to that period. In Vero Beach, standing under an umbrella in a Florida rainstorm, archaeologist Barbara Purdy describes her reaction when James Kennedy first showed her his discovery.
Well, we were very skeptical, of course. Nothing like that had ever been found in the Western Hemisphere before. And it would be nice if we had another one somewhere.
Purdy has come to Vero Beach with other researchers from the University of Florida and the Smithsonian to survey the site of a new dig planned not far from where Kennedy says he found his fossil. After he brought it to them, skeptical researchers at the University of Florida conducted extensive testing of the fossilized bone. Rare earth element analysis showed it did come from the Vero Beach area. A scanning electron microscope indicated the carving appeared to be the same age as the bone. Archaeologist Jeff Speakman conducted his own extensive testing and research on the fossil at the Smithsonian. Despite his group's best efforts, he says they couldn't find anything to suggest the mammoth engraving is a fake.
The lines were very clean, well-rounded, did not have any sort of debris field or sharp lines that would indicate any sort of modern forgery.
What would really help convince researchers that the piece of Ice Age art is authentic would be to find other examples. That's why Purdy and Speakman have come to a spot that's well known to archaeologists, the Old Vero Ice Age site. It was first excavated nearly 100 years ago. In 1915, Florida state geologists documented fossilized human skeletons found alongside remains of Ice Age mammals. The age of those human remains was later disputed by other scientists, and the Old Vero site became known mostly as a spot popular with amateur fossil hunters, people like Victor Zink.
When we first came here, I could walk the edge of this bank and pick up bison teeth, broken elephant teeth, just laying scattered all over the ground. It was quite a place.
Zink is here to give the archaeologists practical advice on where they may want to dig. The University of Florida has put together a proposal to fully excavate the site. Dr. Purdy says although the Old Vero site was first discovered nearly a century ago, it's been investigated up to now mostly by paleontologists.
And the archaeology has sort of gone begging. So now if we can get a combination of both working together, I think that it's going to work out a little bit better.
A group in Vero Beach, the Old Vero Ice Age Sites Committee, is working to raise money to fund the project. As for James Kennedy's mammoth engraving, both the University of Florida and the Smithsonian may have to be content with replicas they've cast from the original. Kennedy plans to offer his find for sale at auction. And the going price for a piece that's been described as the oldest, most spectacular, and rare work of art in the Americas is likely to be well out of their budgets. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, July the 25th, 2011. It was on this date, 2000, the Concorde crashed outside Paris, killing 109 persons aboard. One of the tires burst, the debris struck a fuel tank, and the plane burst into flames. It was the world's first supersonic commercial passenger plane, traveled twice the speed of sound, never made any money, it cost so much to develop. It was noisy, expensive to operate, and they stopped flying it altogether in 2003. It's the anniversary of the first successful demonstration of a commercial electric telegraph, 1837. Early attempts were not encouraging. There was a German design, used separate wires for each letter of the alphabet and each numeral. The wires submerged in glass tubes filled with acid, and you had to watch which tube bubbled. Another design worked over longer distances.